24. The Providence of God. All the while the Mayflower, blissfully unaware of the controversy she bore, sluggishly blundered on in her southward course. The pilgrims were sadly disappointed to have to continue to sail in her. It was a grievous blow that caused many a heartfelt pang. How awful it was to turn away from the land. How it hurt. What frustration. How despondent they were. They had grown so weary with the voyage, and their gladsome anticipation of landfall had been so rudely and so quickly dashed. They were just plain, simple folk, honest and open. Harm and deception never entered their heads, but here they were, cheated once again. It had been a mortal distress. It shocked and offended them to realize that they had been so badly treated. It left them numb inside, vague, gloomy, listless. They were a bewildered company, sadly dazed and dejected. A blank cloud hung over them. They stood about the deck of the Mayflower, small, desultory groups, mumbling to each other in apathetic, low tones. Mumbling about nothing in particular. Mumbling to no one in particular. No one listened, no one bothered, no one cared. An air of languid dejection, mingled with confusion, covered them all. The agony of their wretched circumstances pressed itself relentlessly into their minds. They could see the land, so near, and yet so far. They could almost reach out and touch it, almost. There it was, so close. They looked with longing eyes and heavy hearts towards the coast. Oh, to be ashore, and leave this miserable, stinking Mayflower, for good and for all. Oh, to be rid of this squalid existence. Yet they knew they must not yield to the temptations to put ashore, even for a short time. That would be fatal, and they knew it. They had to go on, they just had to. They just had to endure their sad plight for a while longer. A few weary hours went by. They dragged, oh, so slowly. Surely someone must have made a mistake with the sandglass. Surely we've been going south longer than that. Even the vessel had given up hope. She had given up all heart for the voyage. She limped along wearily. She dragged herself through the bitter sea. The voice of the lookout broke into the sullen depression. "Ahead! Ahead!" he screamed. "Ahead! Look ahead!" "What is it? What is it?" The pilgrims shook themselves. They came alive. Eager eyes flickered with concern. "What is it? What is it? Ahead! Ahead!" Everyone ran to the bows, pressed forward and strained their eyes ahead. "What is it? What is it?" Justice and Prudence were held tightly against the side, crushed, so that they could hardly breathe. "Ahead! Ahead! Why is it? Why is it?" Ahead they could see the flat sea, that was all. But no, there, there it was broken, broken into a thousand frothy white peaks. "Waves, waves, breaking right out in the open sea," exclaimed Justice. There, look!" He tugged out his tightly squeezed arm from between his pressed body and the side of the ship. He pointed ahead. "What is it? What is it?" As far as the eye could see, the ocean was alive, teeming, bubbling with white horses. It was a boiling cauldron, leaping, dancing, frothing and foaming. The pilgrims could hear the crashing din of the huge breakers and the pulsating roar of the wild surf. Right out in the open sea. "What is it? What is it? What can it be?" A sailor's voice sounded behind them falteringly. "Dangerous shoals. It's dangerous shoals. That's what it is. All right. It's a treacherous place, right enough. We better keep clear of them. If we get into that, we shall be done for. That we will." "What will happen, sir?" Justice turned his head, anxiously peering up and back at the speaker. happen, young Lovelace? Well, it'll be broken up. That's what. Broken up. It'll be the end of the Mayflower. She'll never stand that, he ended knowingly, but depressingly. All of us, too, I reckon, added another. Abrupt, frantic, unintelligible orders rang out from the captain. Look lively there! The agile sailors sprang wildly to their stations. With swift, short jerks, sheets were rapidly lengthened or shortened. Sails were altered like the wind. The helm was forcibly swung about. The ship was flung violently onto a desperate course of hoped-for safety. The sudden, drastic alteration of the Mayflower's course sent the pilgrims tumbling about the deck. Many were flung down. Arms and legs went everywhere. Elbows were bruised, knees scraped, confusion reigned. Women cried, children whimpered. Blood flowed from many a wound. Justice and prudence picked themselves up. Fortunately, they were unscathed, merely winded. They peered uneasily over the side of the ship. What will greet us? The breakers were still there ahead of them. The ship was still ever shortening the distance between them and death. The wind in her sails attempted to drive the Mayflower to safety, but still the danger drew her to destruction. The roar of the surf shut out all other sound. The waves tossed themselves in a frantic maelstrom. So close, oh, so close. Will she hold off? Will she get clear? The laughing shoals of death continued to send out their siren call. But the faithful Mayflower resisted. She held her own. At first, oh, how painfully, how slowly she resisted. But she kept her distance, and then, bit by bit, agonizingly slowly, tiny bit by tiny bit, she drew away. She drew away from danger and death. She had swung about. She moved off to safety. She was free. They were delivered. They were safe. Justice and prudence gasped with relief. They released their pent-up emotions and held breath. Safe. We're safe. They were reprieved. At first, the people were delighted to stand clear of the danger. But it rapidly dawned upon them that these shoals were a real hindrance to their continued progress southward. What will it mean? Mean? Delays. The captain is of the opinion that we shall have to put out to sea again, so that he can bring us round behind the danger. Put back to sea? Put back to sea? We're thoroughly sick of the sea. The sea, the detestable sea. The pilgrims hated the very thought of going back out to sea. Hated it. No. A man stood forward and claimed the crowd's attention. Friends, listen to me. We've had enough of this ocean, have we not? Yes. The people gave a hearty endorsement to the sentiment. Yes, you're right, man. We've had enough of the sea. More than enough. That's all very well, my friend, responded Mr. Lovelace, holding out his hand, palm upturned. We can all agree to that. That's easily said. But we must be practical. What's to be done? What should we do about these? He pointed out to the frothy barrier. We can't get through shoals and reefs. It'd be sheer folly to try, plain madness. It'll be the end of the vessel and the end of us too. We must face the facts. We must be sensible. There is no other way to reach Virginia but to go out to the open sea and round. Surely you can see that. His argument effectively silenced the people. They just had to face the stubborn facts that stared them plainly in the face. Wishing was not enough. That wouldn't get rid of the foaming wall. They had to go out to sea to avoid the danger, if they were to reach Virginia. A man from the crowd voiced an opinion felt in many a heart. The captain should never have brought us this far north. It's all his fault. We should never have been here in the first place. At this, an old pilgrim stood, or rather stooped, forward. Dear friends, Listen to me, he said slowly, in his crackly, whistly voice. Will you listen to an old, feeble man? I feel rather like Jacob today. You remember that Laban deceived and cheated him? Cheated him over and over again. Well, but do you remember this? Do you remember what Jacob said about it all, eh? Let me remind you of what he said about it. He said that in spite of the fact that Laban had cheated him, God had not allowed Laban to harm him. Now, isn't that a very wonderful view to take of it all, my friends? God has been in control. God has had his purpose in it. Now, I say I feel like Jacob. We've been cheated. Yes, that's true. Cheated badly. And that man will have to answer for it. But we can leave that to the Lord. But this is what I say. God is in control. Might it not be his purpose to have us make a landfall back up north a bit, eh? Let's be like Joseph. He was just such another as Jacob. Can't we say with him that though the captain and these adventurers meant it for our harm, but God meant it for our good? Eh? I know we didn't mean to make land at that point on the coast, but in the providence of God, that's what has happened. Now we're running into more danger. What I say is this. Can't we look upon it as guidance from the Lord? Let's go back. Back to the bay we saw land first of all. Let's make our landfall there. He stepped back. He was astounded to hear himself make such a speech. That's all. That's all I have to say, he murmured apologetically. The throng was silenced by his remarks. Can it be of the Lord? Is he guiding us in this way? Is he stopping us now and telling us to go back north? What should we do? One stood forward. I, for one, agree with our brother. Let's recognize the hand of our sovereign God in it. Let's go back. A muffled murmur of approval greeted his words. Can you do no better than that, friends? He went on. Let's have better than that. We've had enough of the sea, haven't we? Yes, you know we have. Now the Lord has stopped up our way. Surely it's his call for us to go back. Let's fall in with this clear and plain guidance from God. Let's go back. This time the agreement was heartfelt and full. Well, friends, said Mr. Lovelace, is that your opinion? Go back, is it? It is. Yes, the words came from all quarters. Very well, then. What's this? What's this? The captain appeared at Mr. Lovelace's shoulder. What's this? Turn back? Yes, sir. We've decided to turn back. We can see the hand of God in all this. We yield to his providence. I'm heartily relieved to hear it, my friends. A wise decision, very wise, if I might be so bold. We'll go about, then. We'll be back at Cape Cod the morning after tomorrow. He glanced across to a group of adventurers. Cape Cod it is, then.